Thank you all organizers for inviting me and more importantly sort of putting up with my incompetence. And as you might have, I showed up last night at the airport without passport. Well, you can relate to me, right? So now of course I'm how would you say, I have a responsibility to finish in time, and I will try to finish in time of 40 minutes. If I speak faster, then quicker. All right, so today's talk is about capacity scaling in arbitrary wireless networks. I'll make sure it becomes clear what I mean by all these terms, as in capacity scaling and arbitrary networks. This is based on two pieces of work, one which we started with Ritesh Madan, who is now at Flerion Qualcomm, and Olivier Levesque, who is at EPFL, and ongoing work, which is primarily work of my student, Urs Neeson at MIT, and jointly with Piyush Gupta at Bell Labs. Okay, so here's the problem, right? So what's the problem? Well, we have N nodes which are capable of doing wireless transmission. I'll assume that they are placed in some geographic area, and I'll think of this extended network setup, as it's popularly called, as in sort of a square of area N, or side square root of N. I'll assume that nodes are heterogeneous in the sense that every node is allowed to transmit head unit power. And there's some channel or communication model. I'll come to that in a second. What we would like to do is we would like to characterize the capacity region, capital lambda, as in set of all feasible rate tuples. So the small lambda is n cross n matrix, and lambda ij denotes the rate at which node I wants to send data to node j. Here I'm assuming unicast setup, and I'm going to assume unicast setup in the whole sense. So if I is sending data to j, the data it's going to send to j prime is going to be totally different, and I'm going to treat them separately. Okay, so we want to do this. Or equivalently, we want to find the following rho star of lambda for any lambda in say 0,1 to power n cross n. That is, this is the maximum you can go. So I give you ray lambda, the maximum you can go along that direction, and that would determine the capacity region, because it's a convex monotone region, right, in positive order. Okay, and usually we would like, what we would like to do is, of course, we would like to characterize this, and not in sort of somewhat useful manner, as in we'd like to characterize in terms of model parameters or model description. So usually the model has, these are the sort of the three main parameters. One is node placement. So a popular setup is random node placement. That is, you have this area and you throw nodes uniformly at random independently. Or arbitrary placement. For this talk, arbitrary means that you place them any way you like, as long as you retain minimum distance between any two nodes, doesn't scale down to zero. Okay, so it's minimum distance constraint setup. So that's the node placement. Communication model, there's either some combinatorial model like protocol model, or I'll sort of look at some physical model, as in I'll tell you some kind of a Gaussian fading channel. And traffic, either we are looking at simple random source destination traffic, as in each node is a source and it has its unique random destination, or I would look at arbitrary, as in any form of lambda I will allow. Okay, so we would like to find out rho star in this form. Well, clearly this is very hard. I don't have an answer to this. And well, sort of, that is sort of, so the question is, maybe let's do approximate, and that's the scaling. And this is a question in some sense, so this is the question in some sense what Gupta and Kumar asked, and sort of subsequently, the beautiful set of results for more than a decade, almost a decade now. So I'll take one slide, quick tour of the history. So this was started by Gupta and Kumar in a random setup. I'll come to that setup in the later part of the talk, but it's essentially random node placement and random traffic requirement is asking what is the maximum rate one can send. And then after this series of work, I mean, I can sort of go through at least 4 or 5 slides, list number of papers. So I'm not going to, in all fairness, I'm not going to list any one of them, but thankfully there's a beautiful survey by Xu and Kumar in 2005 in this survey of monograph, and there's now publications. And if you know this, then it's fine. If you don't know this, I encourage you to sort of read the survey. It's a nice one. All right. As you see in this survey on this set of results, is that a reasonable and well understood aspect is a transport capacity. So essentially, transport capacity is a one-dimensional characterization in the following sense that, so given lambda, this is the transport capacity, where Rij is the distance between node pair ij. And what you would like to bound is maximum of t, where maximum is over set of all feasible lambdas. Okay, so in that sense, sort of, you have this one given node placement, you have this one vector r, and you're looking at the maximum sort of the inner product. And in case of regular setup, as in say lambda ij's are regular, then this does give bounds on rho star. But clearly this is not sufficient. I mean, it's just one dimension. So we need somewhat more involved notion than just transport capacity. Question is that, what should that notion be? Okay. The way upper bounds are proved, for example, using cut set bounds. And cut set bounds have been around with us for a while, maybe almost 30 years. So maybe cuts should be the right notion. Before we jump to that conclusion, let's sort of take one step back and ask a question. What happens when we are not sort of fancy as in wireless networks, but let's just go back to wireline networks and look at the following setup. So I have a connected graph with n nodes and set of edges along which transmissions can happen. And given lambda, I want to find out rho star of lambda. I'm going to assume undirected graph with capacity. So here is an 8-node graph with 8 edges, and each edge has unit capacity. And there are 4 source destination pairs I have, A, B, C, and D, and these are the routes, basically. Okay. And now I want to find out, so this lambda is given in this form, and I want to find out how much it goes, with how much can I scale so that it still remains inside the capacity region. And in this example, as I have worked out properly, sort of the maximum sort of load on any capacity in this setup is 30. So on these two edges is 30, on this edges is 20, on these edges it's 10. So the rho star, it's easy to work out, that will be 1 over 30 in this case. Okay, is everybody with me? This is just a simple example. Okay, so so this is what we want to work out, and the question is that how does this go? So of course, I mean, in our network flow classes, we have all seen this basic result of Ford-Fulkerson, right? That is, let's see, I have a very simple setup. There is just one source destination pair. There is a source here, there is a destination here. What is the max flow? Well, max flow min cut theorem says that max flow is equal to min cut. Particularly, I take all sorts of possible cuts and then try to find out what is the maximum rate that's going across, then it will be just minimum cut. I think here is a typo. I should have divided by lambda ij or lambda ft. It's normalized because I'm looking at rho star of lambda. Sorry for that. Okay, but the point is that it's a min cut that's characterizing. But what about sort of more source destination pair? I just told you one source. What about many? Of course, min cut would provide upper bound because it's just sort of the cut tells you this is the data that you can send, and if you divide by the amount of data that has to go through it, that normalized cut would give you an upper bound. Question is that it is that tight. It's a beautiful question. It's a terrific answer. And here is sort of a terrific result by Linian, Lundell, and Rabinowitz in 96, which essentially says the following. So let's say you have a lambda, and let's say the number of non-zero entries or positive entries are k. So there are k commodities, basically. And I want to find out rho star of lambda. As we just sort of went through the argument, it's less than or equal to min cut. So just sort of, let's just parse it for a second. So for a given subset of nodes, there's S and S complement. Look at the rate at which data can go, maximum rate at which data can go, and look at the rate at which data needs to go. And normalize them, take minimum over all S, it's clearly an upper bound, and it's no weaker than 1 over log K. Beautiful result. And started by work of Leighton and Rao in 88, which sort of talked about a specific case where lambda is equals to 1 for all ij's. And so in general, the gap is log n. or summaries that cuts are sufficient to characterize row star if you are okay with sort of forgetting log factors. Okay. Question is that are they sufficient for wireless networks? Okay. Yes.
So a cut is usually defined for a single commodity problem. So here, if there's multiple commodities and you have a cut, what if the commodities involve all the nodes? So it's impossible to partition the nodes into one side of the cut.
Okay, so it's a good question. So Mike's question is that usually sort of when we define for a cut in the classical Ford Ferguson sense, assumption that cut sort of separates the source. But here the way we would do is as follows. I think I should use that thing. Yeah. So the way we would do is sort of, so again we sort of take some subset of nodes. Let's define the cut. And given that subset of node, S is one side, S complement is other side, and look at the data that can go across. This is just a graph property. Now divided by, this is the amount of data that needs to go through the set of sources and destinations that we have separated through this cut. Okay? And naturally that's an upper bound, and the beautiful fact is it's indeed. This is a very interesting result, and if you would like to, this connects to sort of the notion of embeddings of the metric into L2 metric and so on. So it's a very pretty theory there. Anyways, back to our question. So are cuts sufficient for wireless? Because indeed we can go to Cover and Thomas and sort of find the standard notion of cuts, right? Question is that are they sufficient? So here is the outline for my rest of the talk. First we'll go through combinatorial model, and sort of for not too many, it will become clear that why the cuts are sufficient. Then sort of I'll take a simpler sort of transition towards harder problem, is a sort of a friendly physical model, and there again cuts are almost sufficient. I'll tell you what almost means there. And then sort of I'll take sort of a more formidable problem where of course I don't have answers and possibly more questions than answers, but at least I'll hopefully excite you about the questions if not answers. Right? And that'll be the end of my talk. Okay. Alright. So what do I mean by combinatorial model? So essentially here is so we have a wireless network of N nodes. And by combinatorial model, I'm going to tell you that these are the set of links that are allowed. There can be possibly all n choose two links, or there can be possibly a lot less. And given that, I will tell you a subset of, say, 0, 1 to power n cross m, there is a subset of all possible edges that are possible allowed to transmit simultaneously. Okay? What do I mean by that? Let's take this caricature. So I have a three-node graph, and the constraint is independent set constraint, which essentially means that a node transmits, all of its neighbors should be quiet, just like, yeah. And so here are sort of three possible ways transmissions can happen, as in either this node transmit and these two are quiet, or this node transmit and that node transmit, or no one transmits, of course. Okay, and so this is the combinatorial model. And the question is that sort of, in this situation, what happens? For simplicity, I'll assume that all transmissions are of unit rate, and of course, if there's no edge, you can't transmit. And let's curly C be the convex hull of this set of all allowable transmissions in a natural way. And I'll assume it's order symmetric, as in if C is there, essentially C transpose is there, modulus some factor. And as you see all the popular models, this is true, either because of the geometry of the network or it's just a model itself is symmetric. Like if you have sort of let's say matching model, it's symmetric, or if you have sort of a network sort of laid out in area with sort of minimum distance constraint, then you still have some enough geometry in the network. So these type of things are going to be true, which essentially gives a sort of almost modular factor. It almost gives you sort of undirected setup. So in case of independent set constraint, this is what it would happen, as in the sum of the times you transmit along edge I to j is no more. because in a given time you can only have one transmission. Okay, now here is so given this, what's the rho star? Okay, so if we ignore this, then it's essentially same as what we had in the wireline cases in linear London Rabinowitz's result. And all I'm saying here is just sort of, in this case, all you really need to do is that, given that sort of C is the set of all possible link rates you can assign, try to find the one which is maximal, that will maximize this min cut, and by linear London Rabinowitz's result, you can achieve log n factor. So, no rocket science, it's just a fact. Okay, but sort of the point is that so we have figured this implicit form. Of course, we are known to have pretty answers, right? 1 over square root of n, it's nice. This is not pretty, because it's very implicit. The question is that, is it true that sort of pretty answers do fall out easily out of this? And I'll try to convince you, yes, at least for some of the known examples, it is indeed true. So, going back to the Gupta-Kumar, the random nodes placed in this extended area, and this is the transmission radius. So is, the protocol model says that node I can transmit to node j if they're within this distance, within square root of log n, and no other node within sort of this distance is transmitting at the same. Okay, and in this case, because of geometry, you would see that it's an order symmetric within factor log n. You can make it tight, but let's say logs, let's not worry about that. Okay. So, and random traffic requirement. So this is the placement, this is the model, and this is the traffic requirement. So traffic requirement is each node is a source, and it has a distinct destination. And this pairing is done uniformly at random among all possible things. So essentially a permutation, and all possible permutations are equally likely. Now, of course, the last result was about rho star of lambda. This is about sort of n factorial possible things. What's the relation? I'll come to that in a second. But just last thing I want to tell you is that now, in this random model, you want maximal supportable rate for all sources with high probability. And that's the thing that you want to determine. And what Gupta-Kumar showed, that this is essentially 1 over square root of n. So let's try to recover that. Now here is a fact. So this is how we relate this back to the rho star of lambda. So look at a uniform lambda, as in lambda with all ij's equal to 1. And the fact is that the mu star of r is order n times the rho star of 1. Okay, and this is independent of, this is just a traffic, it's as in, this is a mere relation between the fact that doubly stochastic matrices have extreme points, permutations, and there is a nice routing, or sort of an abstract routing scheme that exists due to Valiant and Bremner. So, the point is that random traffic model, while it feels like it's like n factorial different probes that we are making, it's essentially equivalent to just one probe, which is going along this direction and finding how far we can go. Okay, so now we are in the sort of framework of the previous slide. Now we want to figure out rho star of 1. Okay. Now, so just summarizing, we have this geometric random graph where n nodes thrown at random and two nodes are connected if they're within distance square root of log n. No edge, because of the protocol model, can have transmission rate more than 1. And using simple TDMA scheme, you can get within 1 over log n. So if you put all these things together in the previous slide, what will come out is that rho star of 1 is indeed determined by this min cut. The min cut is just a property of this GNR. So you look at the graph, look at any subset of its vertices, and look at the number of edges that are going out of these set S divided by the size of that set and minimize over set of all S's which are no more than n by 2. Okay? And this is nothing but sort of a conductance corresponding to the Laplacian of the graph. Okay. So if we determine this would give us that multiplied by 1 over n will give us rho star. and by previous identity, this indeed would give us new star, which is what Gupta Kumar wanted. Okay. So it's a geometry random graph, so while it is like a grid, but there is some work, but sort of there's a pretty result by Peter Shor in his PhD thesis in 1984, which is about something called min-max matching about random geometric random graph. And once you sort of put it together properly, it indeed follows that sort of the conductance of this graph is like 1 over square root of n. So the intuition we had because of the sort of GNR's similarity with grid is this should be like 1 over square root of n. It is, and it is indeed true. There's some work, but it follows from this work. Okay. Summary is that we do get sort of Gupta Kumar's 1 over square root of n. Okay, so it's consistent. And just sort of quickly, the Gross-Glauser Sayes model. Here the idea was that sort of nodes are moving in a sort of some area. They are moving independently and they have uniform stationary distribution. And two nodes, the standard protocol model, will communicate if they are within distance one of each other. And that would happen because of independence and uniform distribution, that order 1 over n times two nodes are able to transmit to each other successfully. So what we have now, we have n nodes with each node connected to neighbor with edge capacity order 1 over n. It's a complete graph, not much mystery left. And in this case, there is no even sort of, in case of linear London-Rabinowitz's case, there is no log factor because in embedding, distortion doesn't happen for complete graph. So indeed, conductance is 1 and we get 1. Okay. And this is immediately sort of also tells you how what is the general capacity will scale. All right, so the point is that for the combinatorial model, we know how things are, and it's not too much mystery. Okay, so let's move to sort of a friendly channel setting. Okay, so here sort of I'm going to assume that nodes are placed arbitrarily with minimum distance constraint. And here is a standard channel model. If you have seen it, you know what it is. If you haven't seen it, it will be hard to parse, but this is what it is. Okay, the thing that I want you to sort of take away from this is that noise, it's an additive Gaussian channel, noise is IID, and there's this fading coefficient which is this power attenuation, and here I'm going to assume that it's decaying exponentially. It's very fast, very friendly, okay? And I'm going to assume that receiver only the channels take information, just the details. Point is, this is a friendly setup. And given this, I want to figure out rho star of lambda. Okay? And I'll assume that sort of network is connected when I sort of connect nodes that are within log n distance. It's an assumption, friendly setup, but it's not that bad. I mean, I just sort of thought of two topologies which sort of tell you that it can be reasonably bad. So for example, these are nodes, let's say, which are within log n distance, and I put lots of them, and then I have lots of nodes here. And you can imagine all sorts of topologies. And the point is that sort of in geometry, you can have with minimum distance constraint the whole spectrum of spectral properties of these type of graphs under this model. So I'm not sort of really sort of it's not a trivial model. Okay. All right. So this is the result, that rho star of lambda is upper bounded by min cut and lower bounded by min cut within fifth power of log n. Okay, under this setup. I'm not going to expand further because I want to go to the more interesting part. I'll quickly tell you roughly how the proof goes. Essentially, the proof is by sandwiching. We have a wireless network, but it doesn't have links and it doesn't have capacitated links. So what I would like to do is, if I have a lower bounding graph and upper bounding graph, lower bounding graph is achievable. Upper bounding graph provides me sort of matches with the classical cut set bounds that we obtain from, say, Kovar and Thomas, and if sort of both of them are not too far from each other, then sort of if we put them together by sort of achievability of LLR, it will follow that this is achievable. That's essentially the point. But this is a nice friendly setup, and hence this happens. It is indeed a very friendly setup, and hence sort of multi-hop is sufficient in some sense to get a reasonable lower bounding graph or tight lower bounding graph. In general, we need better strategy. In particular, we need better than multi-hop. Multi-hop is sort of too lossy, and we need sort of not too weak upper bound. All we really need to worry about is tight bound, tight cuts. So, I don't have a plan for that in general, but I'll tell you some things. Okay, and in next say 10 minutes, I'll take you through somewhat interesting tour. Okay, so this is the split of this is the work with Urs and Piyush. So here is what I'm going to assume. So I have an extended area and nodes placed. Either they are placed uniformly and independently at random, or they will be placed with minimum distance constraints. So I'll call it random or arbitrary placement. This is just same traffic, same channel model, but now sort of I'm going to assume less friendly setup, as in my power is going to attenuate a polynomial in particular with power alpha. Okay, and alpha is given 2, and I'll assume full CSI, so sort of now things become harder. Okay, and here is what we are going to look at. So first, random node placement and random traffic. So friendly placement, friendly traffic, and there is a beautiful set of results which are recent. I will take you through them, and they sort of complete this story. Then we'll come to this one. We'll relax this part. I mean, let's sort of forget about random placement. Let's look at arbitrary placement, but let's be friendly in terms of traffic. We have two axes. Let's relax one axis. Again, sort of here we know precisely how it goes, and I'll tell you that part. Let's become very bold. Arbitrary placement, arbitrary traffic. I have some quick inner bounds. For some cases it's tight, but not always. So sort of let's become sort of more sort of humble and come back. Okay, let's forget sort of arbitrary node placement. So I have two axes, right? Sort of placement and traffic. First I relaxed placement, it works fine, we have answers. Now I'll keep the placement random, but I'll relax the arbitrary, and I'll have a comment. Initially I was hoping that we won't have results by this time, but I'm not going to tell because we are still writing. Okay, but I believe that we have complete characterization there. Okay, so I'll give you one comment. All right, here's a very, very nice set of results. So I give you random placement, uniform, or random traffic, and source destination, or traffic uniformly, they're equivalent as we have seen. And I'm going to look at power attenuation alpha. And this is a result by Azur, Levick, and Say very recently. It shows that for alpha between 2 and 3, this mu star of R scales like this. So ignore epsilon for a second, but we'll come back to that. But for a second, ignore that. Then this is what matters. And if you have alpha greater than 3, then n raised to minus half. So just sort of to see it friendly way, this is how the plot looks. Okay. Alright, so what does this mean really? So if you have alpha near 2, then essentially mu star scales like order 1, which is as good as you could have expected. And if you have greater than 3, then it's square root of n, which sort of is a familiar thing from multi-hop, which we know. Okay, let me sort of take you through a few more things. So the way achievability comes around here, through a clever hierarchical cooperative scheme. And it's a network-wide hierarchical cooperative scheme. And that's what sort of gets you between alpha between 2 and 3, and that's sort of the clever part and difficult part. For alpha greater than 3, it's just a multi-hop. Converse of upper bound, again sort of it follows from cut set bounds, but there is a nicer evaluation involved in there. And if you are in this business and if you haven't seen this, I would sort of suggest that check this. This is a nice trick. Okay. Alright, so that's that result. What is the main operational conclusion here is this is nice algorithmic threshold. I mean, if you are between alpha between 2 and 3, is you need network-wide cooperation to do well. But if you are alpha greater than 3, then simple multi-hop and local cooperation works. Okay, so that was that's the conclusion so far. Any questions? Okay. So now we want to look at arbitrary placement, but same random traffic constraint. The first result is that scaling doesn't change. As in, even though I place node anyway, scaling doesn't change. And the way sort of, and this is tight, as in the achievability comes through sort of, it's again sort of a cooperative network-wide scheme, but it's a different scheme. It has to be geography aware. I'll take you through a caricature soon. In remaining, I'll extend 1 minute, 5 minutes. And upper bound again through cut set bound, but you need to sort of work hard to get the answer. Okay. So there is no change as far as alpha between 2 and 3 is concerned because of arbitrary placement. But alpha greater than 3, something interesting happens. And this is what interesting happens. For alpha greater than 3, naive multi-hop scheme is not optimal. And I haven't changed traffic requirement. It's still same random traffic. It's just the placement of nodes on can sort of, what do you say, make things bizarre. I'll give you one quick example also. And the point is that in order to do the right thing here, one needs a combination of a multi-hop and a hierarchical scheme. So at a different level you want to cooperate and different level you want to do multi-hop. And the way, the amount of this interpolation you do, it depends on how nodes are placed. Okay. So unlike random node placement, there's no algorithmic threshold if you're looking for. You really need, so if you have bad node placement, you just have to work hard to understand your topology and do well. Finally, here is the achievable bound, which said for any lambda, this is do as good as this. This is true for any alpha. And this is tried for, say, uniform traffic because that follows from the previous result. Let's say if you take alpha equals to or close to 2, it's essentially tight. But other than those obvious cases, there is none that is where it's tight. At least I don't know. You can put some more constraints. Okay, so that's the summary of the result. Now I want to sort of take you through this hierarchical cooperative scheme. Okay, so arbitrary node placement with minimum distance constraint but uniform traffic. And the key thing is to sort of find out something called dense squares. So what you do is you take the topology. So first I'm going to describe your basic construct and then tell you how it works further, how hierarchically it works. It's like a tree basically. So you have this square, so you have this total area, you divide it into not too few and not too many squares. And once you divide them in that way, there are constant fraction of squares which are dense, which means a constant fraction of them that have at least number of nodes which are proportional to its area. This is like inverse Markov inequality. It's a simple argument. That follows from minimum distance constraint. Okay. Now these dense squares are useful. So we are going to use them this way. So let's say these are sources and these are destinations. The way they will send their data is they will relay through these dense squares. Because dense squares are good to recurse, okay? And when they do this, in the first case, all these sources who are matched to this dense square, they send their data there. And from those dense squares, that data is further sent to their destinations. In essence, what happens is there is a virtual MAC and virtual broadcast, okay? In order to make sure everything works out fine, here are the properties you need. Property one is that the number of, let's say, these transmitters and these nodes here should be of roughly same order. Second thing is they should be reasonably far apart. So what you have to do is in order to sort of make sure that there is the right amount of load balancing done, you just have to do the packing right. In this case, it works out that you can actually do packing right. So once you do that, you sort of, at a basic construct, you send data from here to these guys. They do something and they relay them here. And that gives you enough freedom. to work around. So overall scheme would look like this. At some layer of hierarchy, as in sort of tree-based routing, so if you have sources sending data to these dense squares, and this is done at time division at that layer. Now at some other layer, where sort of, let's say we go inside this square, sort of again nodes are sort of transmitting data inside there. Now since we have chosen dense square and there's a minimum distance constraint, it's like back to the same problem. That's why there is one another reason why we need dense squares. And once sort of they distribute them, this is needed for the broadcast because they have to distribute, and then you sort of get the next layer. So it's like your data sort of goes up the tree and comes down the tree, and often enough. The question is sort of you have to balance what is your sort of fan out of your tree, and till what level you go. If you optimize it right, then you get that epsilon right that I did not sort of essentially. There is a epsilon in that previous case. Okay, I'm already over time, but I am excited to tell you about it. So give me sort of loan me 2 minutes. Thank you. It's like first loan me different time slots, and now loan me 2 more minutes. Okay, so in case of multi-hop, in case of alpha greater than 3, so here is a sort of a simple counter example. So think of this as 0 to square root of n by 4, square root of n by 4 to 3/4 of square root of n by n, and then 3/4 to n. Now I've got sort of, let's say, n by 2 nodes here, n by 2 nodes there. In essence, the only way to do reasonable transmission is sort of go along across this. And when you have to go across this, right way to do is to sort of do through hierarchical or cooperative transmission and not do multi-hop. If you do multi-hop, you will stuck with this. And if you do it sort of hierarchical, then this is what you will get. So this says that even though you are greater than alpha greater than 3, still sort of cooperative transmission makes sense, not the multi-hop. And the reason is that there are these gaps. These gaps say sort of how much regular your topology is. So in some sense, what you need is you need to sort of figure out that how regular your topology is, and based on that, you need to do sort of the interpolation between multi-hop and hierarchical scheme. And so, for example, I would say that this is regular at level square root of n by 2. So I would say that some topology is regular at level hn. If I sort of lay down a grid of squares of side hn, and if each square has number of nodes of the same order of its area. Okay. So essentially almost all squares are dense, basically, of that size. Indeed, hn equals to square root of n is dense, because if I take the whole area, whole network, there are n nodes inside and its area is n, so it is by definition. Now if I have the squares dense this way, then I can create the sort of the obvious natural scheme, as in multi-hop cooperative scheme, as in, so suppose I have to send data here, these are the squares, I will sort of route them through essentially like a grid style routing, and the way these squares talk to each other is talk to through sort of cooperative scheme. If you sort of calculate things right, then what happens is that each essentially traffic doesn't need to hop more than this much amount, and per node link capacity is this much. You sort of divide it properly, and this is what you get. The rate is at least this much. Thing to observe is that sort of for alpha less than 3, it's better to have large h. For alpha greater than 3, it's better to have small h. And that's what determines sort of what you should do. As in, if you have, so for alpha greater than 3, you would try to find the smallest level at which your topology is regular, and at that level you do multi-hop hierarchy. If you sort of think about it, sort of random network setup is indeed regular at sort of log n level or square root of log. Okay. So the final comments are sort of, we know positive answers for this. We know some answers for this, and I strongly believe that there is some kind of order and cut style sandwiching works for random placement arbitrary traffic. All right.
Yes. dictatorial technique, because somebody should be argument, essentially you get one body in two shots of it. It goes through the upper bound,
uh-huh.
and you get the factor
lower bound.
Not only the size lower bound.
Exactly.
But in the Gopekuma, you would have like, you prove the upper bound, and mm-hmm. then you would get 1 over square root of n log n automatically as
yeah.
lower bound, almost for free.
In this one. Yeah, exactly. So you don't need to sort of work hard to find the routing and everything. And that's why I think this is sort of. Thank you.
Okay.
Sure.
So, the linear scaling of the hierarchical scheme, is that the best? Is that leads any better than that?
You mean linear scaling as in n to the power of 1 minus alpha by 2? Oh, so epsilon, okay. So the best epsilon you can get is 2 to the power. So 2 to the power log raised to minus 1 by 3 n. That's the loss you will have to incur. I mean, that's the best we could calculate based on sort of this MAC broadcast. I strongly believe that you won't be able to get to polynomial. You will have 2 to the power something stuck in, as in something scaling faster than 1 over polynomial in n. But I don't have proof yet.
You had a situation where what happens between 1 and 2 is different from between 2 and 3.
Yeah.
Different from what happens from 3 onward.
Yes.
And you give an argument and it's clear in the face of the argument.
Yeah.
Why
yeah. Yes and no. I mean, if we had thought enough, then we would have guessed it. why is that actually? What is the true reason? True reason is that sort of between 2 and 3, in order to do anything reasonable, whether it's arbitrary placement or any placement, you really need some kind of a network-wide cooperation. So even if sort of I have local holes, sort of, they're not of my bother because at some level I have to cooperate with you at a higher scale in order to achieve high enough capacity.
Why 3? Why is the answer equal 3?
Oh, 3.
Why is not
3 by 2? Okay, that's, I guess, that's analytic.
That's analytic, right?
Yeah.
Or is there geometry playing a role here in kind of an indirect way?
In some sense, yeah. I mean, it's analytic in the sense it becomes summable, quotes and quotes.
But between 2 and 3 also is summable, right?
Well, you get beyond square root of n, so I mean, in that sense, it's not. Okay, so I mean, yeah. But.
So you're working in the cube instead of the square in 2 dimensions?
Yes. Then would things change?
Yeah.
Qualitatively, no. I mean, you can imagine any D dimension, and essentially everything will just tell you. Yeah. Nothing should change. So, I guess you are right. Yeah, so qualitatively things won't change. There will be something like this threshold, but quantitatively, I don't know. Yeah.
The underlying geometry.
That does play. Yeah.
Thank you. So, let's do something next. What did we say? We get 2 o'clock, right? 2:15. That's what the program says. Yeah, that's okay, 2:15. Yeah, I mentioned about the lunch, just to remind you all, there's no organized lunch.